Chapter 62. Gulf of Sidra, 70 miles offshore. Morning spread across the Mediterranean, revealing pristine waters, a cloudless day, and the Griffin on station 70 miles off the coast of Libya. Kurt and Rudy remained on the bridge, watching the video relay as the Trouts made the first dive. The waters off the Libyan coast were shallow, warm, and clear. Even here, 70 miles from the coast, the depth never exceeded 200 feet. The bottom was sandy and flat, a combination that made for excellent diving. "Wreck in sight," Paul said. "It's definitely a submarine." Kurt and Rudy saw the wreck on the video screen. Even though the vessel was lying on its side, covered in marine life and partially buried in the sediment, its shape was unmistakable. While Paul dropped toward the stern, where the sub's rudder and one of its twin propellers could be easily seen, Gamay swam along the length of the hull. "I'm not seeing any damage," she said. "In fact, I'm not seeing anything to indicate a traumatic impact. More like it settled gently into the silt and then rolled over on its side." "That's good," Paul suggested. "Should make it easier to search." "Assuming this is the right submarine," Kurt said. "Let's make sure it is what we think it is. Head around to the bow." The Minerve had a distinctive bell-shaped housing jutting upward near the bow. It allowed a powerful sonar system to be installed without forcing the relocation of the torpedo tubes, of which the Minerve had 12, 8 in the front and 4 in the stern. Engaging his thrusters, Paul traveled the length of the hull, passing the conning tower and maneuvering toward the front of the ship. He paused over a mound of silt that had covered the bow like a sand dune. Using his thrusters, Paul scoured away the sediment. Kurt and Rudy watched the results. The distinctive sonar housing and the opened outer door of the number one torpedo tube were plainly visible. "That's her, all right," Rudy said. "Your skills of divination have few equals." "Thanks," Kurt said. "I'll take the pat on the back later. Let's get that sub open and find what we came here for." As Kurt, Paul, and Gamay began working on the French submarine, Hiram Yeager sat at his desk 5,000 miles and 7 time zones away, watching the progress remotely. It was just past midnight in Washington, D.C.
"Does it look like they're cutting in the right place?" Hiram asked Max.
Max replied with typical precision. Based on the camera angle and the orientation of the submarine's centerline, Paul and Gamay appear to be cutting within 6 inches of the optimal location, a perfectly adequate level of precision for human work.
"What are the chances that submarine is filled with explosive gas?" Hiram asked.
"Unknown," Max said, "though unlikely in general."
"That's one less thing to worry about."
Hiram leaned back, put his feet up on the desk, and kept his eyes focused on the monitor. Using the trench crawler's welding tools, Paul had just finished removing a section of the outer hull. He and Gamay were now going to work on the submarine's inner pressure hull. The process was slow, and Hiram began to feel drowsy as he watched. He was just starting to nod off to sleep when his desk phone rang in a particularly shrill tone. Jerking upright, he pulled his feet off the desk.
"Max, if this is you, I'm disconnecting your power supply."
"The incoming call is not my doing," Max said. "It's the communications office."
"At this hour?"
Hiram picked up the phone.
"This is Yeager."
"Mr. Yeager, this is L.A. Ramos in communications."
"What can I do for you, Ms. Ramos?"
"I have something you need to hear. It's coming in on the 12.290 kilohertz band."
"The old shortwave emergency band?"
"Yes," Ms. Ramos said. "It's the marine band. Even though it's not officially in use anymore, we still monitor it."
"If someone is declaring an emergency, you need to put it through to the Coast Guard, or..."
"It's not a marine emergency," she replied. "It may even be a joke, I'm not really sure. But please, could you just listen?"
"Put it through."
A brief click tied the transmission into Hiram's phone, and Hiram put the phone on speaker. At first, all he heard was static. Then a low squeal that faded, leaving only a continuous background buzz. Finally, words emerged.
"Unsure of our exact location. somewhere in Kazakhstan between and 47 degrees north latitude, 150 miles east of the Caspian Sea.
A chill ran down Hiram's spine as he recognized the voice.
Priya, he said. Priya, can you hear me?
Eli Ramos replied. We tried to speak to her already. Either it's a one-way broadcast or she's simply unable to pick up our response. Either way, she's been speaking continuously since the transmission started, repeating some of what she's already said.
Because she has no idea how much is getting through, Hiram said. Tell me you're recording this.
We're following standard emergency broadcast protocol.
Numa recorded all emergency radio calls, storing important ones in a computer archive indefinitely.
Priya's voice returned, and Hiram fell silent.
Joe assisted my escape, now missing, had been attempting to sabotage the Monarch.
Did she say Joe?
Affirmative, Max said.
Tessa Franco working with members of Regional Oil Consortium. Ecological intentions fraudulent. Goal is permanent worldwide oil shortage.
Another squeal interrupted the broadcast.
Max, triangulate the signal. We need to know where she's broadcasting from.
Triangulation impossible, Max said. None of our other shortwave receivers are picking up the signal. Perhaps due to the transmitter location, atmospheric effects, or the quality of receiving equipment.
The antennas built into the Numa HQ were among the most sensitive in the world, designed to pick up even the faintest radio calls from around the globe. The only equipment matching what they had in D.C. was at another Numa facility in Hawaii, 5,000 miles farther away, too far to pick up Priya's broadcast. The signal cleared, and Priya's voice returned once again. This time it was so faint that Hiram could hardly hear it.
Have been forced to hack. Numa system compromised. Kurt's location known and being tracked. In danger. Will be attacked upon discovery of French submarine. Tessa desperate to possess antidote. Claiming possession of guided anti-ship missiles. Please warn before...
A long squeal interrupted the broadcast, and when it faded, there was no sound whatsoever.
Ellie, what happened?
We've lost the signal, she replied. Transmission has ceased. I'm sorry. I'll have the recording logged and labeled appropriately.
No, Hiram said. Make no record of it.
But store the recording under a miscellaneous file. Label it something innocuous like sunspot interference and speak to no one about this.
But Mr. Yeager, that's not our standard protocol.
Do it, Hiram said. I'll explain later.
Yes, sir, she said.
Hiram put the phone down, breaking the contact.
Max, he said, have we been hacked?
My systems are secure, Max said, but Numa has other servers and standalone systems.
Please check them thoroughly, Hiram ordered.
It took a few minutes, but Max answered exactly as Hiram expected him to.
92% chance that supply and logistics module has been compromised. Other applications show similar intrusions.
That explains how they found Kurt in the Mediterranean, Hiram said.
Would you like me to secure the system with revised procedures?
Hiram debated for a second.
No, he said. Leave it alone for the moment.
Allowing a known security breach to remain open is inadvisable, Max said. It will only invite further intrusions.
I know, Hiram said, but I'd rather they not know we're onto them.
A reasonable gambit.
A gambit is right, Hiram said. I need to speak with Kurt and Rudy, but not via the satellite network, in case that has been compromised as well.
The Griffin is equipped with encrypted radio receivers, Max said. Impossible for a third party to listen in.